Hello, friends of First Reading, fans who are listening this summer. My name is Rosie Candlethal. I'm an assistant professor of religion at Wake Forest University. I teach in the area of Bible. And I'm coming to you with our new format for the summer, one that you might be familiar with if you were listening to us last summer, called Summer Shorts. And in this brief, maybe 5-minute podcast, we attempt to provide you with preaching insights and some background for the first reading. So I am joining you this week to help you perhaps think through the lectionary readings for June 22nd, the second week after Pentecost. And as you probably know, we are now in that long stretch of time called Ordinary Time between Pentecost all the way up to Advent. And as you look at the lectionary readings, you will see two strands. One strand is the semi-continuous readings, and those are addressing the prophets of the Hebrew Bible primarily. And then there is a thematic set of readings, this second set. And those readings are intended to pair with the gospel reading from Luke for year C. And this year, what we have decided to do as a podcast family is to look specifically at the thematic strand. Our reading for June 22nd, our first reading is from Isaiah chapter 65, verses 1 through 9. And the second reading is from the Psalm 22, verses 19 to 28. Just a couple of quick things about Isaiah 65, as you can even hear from the number. We're in the third part of Isaiah, which runs from about chapter 56 to 66. And if you remember, just from your seminary days, maybe, third Isaiah is addressing a different historical context than first and second Isaiah. This is considered to be a set of prophetic writings, readings, speeches addressed to an exiled generation that has now returned to Jerusalem. And in this set of prophetic texts, what we are seeing is it's marked by a lot of internal conflict, a lot of disappointment and hope that also mark this this specific section of Isaiah. We're thinking this is being written, obviously, after the exiles have returned. So sometime after 538 BC, we're looking at anywhere from, you know, the portion of the 6th century all the way to something that's closer to the Hellenistic period in the 4th century. And that's where we are historically and contextually. And as you can see, literarily, we're almost at the end of the book. So by Isaiah chapter 65, we've learned a few things. And one of them is what I'm going to suggest is going to be my kernel for you preachers, is this idea of appreciating a surprise ending. So Isaiah chapter 65, verses 1 through 7, sounds very much like a prophecy of doom, a judgment oracle, something that you will recognize from first Isaiah, even a bit from second Isaiah, but it is a type. Right. And 65 begins in response to the end of chapter 64, in which the people ask basically this question that we also hear at the end of Lamentations chapter 5. Will you restrain yourself, O Lord? Will you keep silent and punish us so severely? It's a question addressed to the Lord. How long, O Lord? A refrain that we hear throughout the Hebrew Bible. Chapter 65 is phrased with I was ready to be sought out by those who did not ask, those who did not seek. And it says, I said, Hine, Hine, here I am, here I am. This prophetic word that we often talk about, in which it's the prophet's response to say, here I am, to the call of the Lord. Here in chapter 65, we see Yahweh. We hear God using this phrase, Hine, Hine, here I am, to a nation that was not called by my name. And so what we hear in this beginning of chapter 65 is God affirming that God has been there, is there, and is reaching out to a nation that may not have known that he was there or were not called by God's name. And so what we see or hear is, I held out my hands all day long to rebellious people who walk in a way that is not good. Here we hear that judgment that we have recognized from other portions of Isaiah. And as we continue, you hear it get even worse, right? So there's an indictment here of those who sacrifice in gardens, who offer incense on bricks, who sit inside tombs and spend the night in secret places, who eat the flesh of pigs with broth of abominable things in their vessels, right? So things are not going well. The indictment here is, as we've come to expect, about idolatry or false worship, right? And so we're expecting this oracle to end very badly. But as we see, the turning point happens in verse 8. Thus says the Lord, as the wine is found in the cluster, and they say, do not destroy it, for there is a blessing in it, so I will do for my servant's sake and not destroy them all. What we're hearing in verse 8 is the prophet in God's name referencing a human prophecy about how wine works, right? In order to press wine, you've got to press bad fruit with good fruit. I mean, the juice is in both of those fruits. And the wine comes from the pressing of all different kinds of quality of grape. And then it's in the mixing and in the quality adjustment that you make at the end that produces a delicious wine, right? But God seems to be referencing this proverb, a human proverb, to say what is about to happen. This turning point in this oracle that looked as though it was going to end in judgment now begins to shift toward a sense of forbearance, that this is a mixed community. And there's a mixed result. There may be some disappointment there from God and the people. But here we are, and we're going to try to make this wine together, right? And verse 9 ends on a hopeful note, a note of salvation. I will bring forth descendants from Jacob and from Judah, inheritors of my mountains. My chosen shall inherit it, and my servants shall settle there. The Isaiah portion continues, but this is where the lectionary reading cuts out, right? And what I want to help you appreciate is the surprise ending here, because if we have been paying attention to the prophet, we would be expecting an oracle of doom. What we get is a turning here, a kind of forbearance, and even then, a declaration of praise and of change that will happen here for this community. As we think about the themes here that's presented in Isaiah, I want to now think about the Luke reading, right? So our Luke reading is taken from Luke chapter 8, 26 to 39. It is the story of the Gerasenes demoniac. And that is a story that is probably well known to many of your congregations if they've been in church for a while. It's the story of a man who is desperately outcast, right? Jesus goes to the shore and he's met by a man who is an inconvenient human, maybe the most kind way of putting it. He is probably naked, according to some manuscript traditions, homeless, living in the tombs. He is marked by uncleanness, social shame. He has been an ex-prisoner, so he's been kept under guard and shackled. This is someone who has been shunned by this society. But it is Jesus who immediately addresses this situation. And we can hear some echo back to the Isaiah passage where we heard about swine and the flesh of pigs, right? So a bit of an echo here, but here again, what I want to emphasize is that idea of a surprise ending, right? Because by the end of this passage, we find this man who is in every respect, someone who is unclean, someone who would be considered abominable, someone who, you know, society has given up on. And by the end of the story, he is sitting at Jesus's feet, clothed and in his right mind. He wants to follow Jesus, but Jesus sends him home instead to declare how much God has done for you. That's what Jesus says to him in verse 39. Go back home. Now, the villagers, this provokes fear in them. But nonetheless, right, we might expect different responses to the work of God in our lives, right? Again, this idea that I want to keep highlighting is that there's a surprise ending here. This is not what is expected for the life of this man. Society had given up on him. He himself calls himself someone who's possessed by a legion of demons, right? Beyond the idea of even a normal exorcism in this ancient world. And yet here he is at the end of the story, sitting down in his right mind, fully clothed, able to participate in society. And he returns home and he tells others of the work that God has done. Now, as we look at the lectionary readings, I might suggest now looking at Psalm 22 again. Now, Psalm 22 is well known to many of you because these are the words that the psalm begins with, my God, why have you abandoned me? The words of Jesus from the cross. But this section of the lectionary points us to verses 19 to 28, which is the latter half of the psalm. And it's maybe one that is less familiar to your congregations, but it begins with a lament. And then it moves to praise, right? And the words here in verses 19 to 28 sound to me very much like what this now healed demoniac man feels. And it says, I will tell of your name to my brothers and sisters in the midst of the congregation. I will praise you. For he did not abhor the affliction of the afflicted. He did not hide his face from me, but heard when I cried to him. The poor shall eat and be satisfied, and those who seek him shall praise the Lord. Dominion belongs to the Lord, and he rules over the nations. So there is where the Psalm 22, I might suggest, might in some way encapsulate the words that the demoniac uses after his healing to describe what God has done. He wasn't hidden from God's face. God heard and God answered. So as we think about the readings for this week, I want to invite you to think about a surprise ending and what that might look like for our congregations as we think about the work of the Spirit in this second week of Pentecost. Like, let's put Pentecost back there. But the idea is that ordinary time is a living into the fullness of the Spirit, and the Spirit delights in reversals. I don't know if there's an illustration that you might be looking at. I am thinking of the reverse card in Uno, which we play a lot during the summer. And that card has a way of just flipping the script and making everyone kind of laugh in delight. It's a surprise. And I want to restore that to these readings here, that Pentecost and living into the Spirit is essentially an enterprise in living into the surprise of what God is doing. And miracles should not be something that maybe we just read over as something that's familiar, but maybe this week we're restoring this idea of the Spirit as surprise.